Hello and welcome to Vermont Edition's continuing election coverage. I'm Jane Lindholm, and today we bring you the debate between the major party candidates for Attorney General. The Attorney General is called the top legal officer in the state. Among many areas of oversight, the job includes enforcing and defending state laws, reviewing the actions of police, and being a watchdog for consumers. Two candidates for Attorney General join me in the studio today. Democratic incumbent Bill Sorrell has served as Attorney General for 17 years and is running for a ninth term. And Shane McCormick is the Republican challenger. He's an attorney with the Burlington firm Burek, Anderson & Maloney, and he won the Republican nomination with a write-in campaign. Shane McCormick, Bill Sorrell, welcome to both of you.
Oh, thanks for asking us, Jane.
The third candidate on the ballot for this race is Rosemary Jakowski of the Liberty Union Party. She was invited to the debate, but is unable to be here today. We have a link to her platform at vpr.net. Here's the format for the debate. In the first round, I'll ask the questions. In the second round, you will question one another directly. And in the final round, we will have questions from our listeners. And listeners, to have your question considered, please send it now to Vermont Edition at vpr.net or post to social media at Vermont Edition. As we get started, a reminder to the candidates, please limit your answers to 60 seconds. There will be time for follow-up questions and answers. All right, let's start right in. Vermont's opiate crisis has been front and center all year as the state tries to curb what, by all accounts, is a big problem for Vermont. Given the role of Attorney General as the state's top prosecutor and also as a platform for addressing issues of statewide importance, for instance, when the current Attorney General teamed up with the Health Commissioner to address obesity, how are you or how would you address the opiate abuse issue? Bill Sorrell, we'll go to you first.
Well, Jane, I have at least a couple of assistant AGs who are working full-time, embedded with the drug task force in the north and working on the most serious prosecutions in state court of those who are involved in drug trafficking. Secondarily, at the request of the mayor and the police chief in Rutland, I have an assistant AG who's working all but full-time down there on the Project Vision, a real community response to drug addiction and related social problems, from child abuse to thefts, on and on. And I've been using the bully pulpit of the Attorney General, including speaking to a national gathering of the drug enforcement police in Burlington yesterday, to say that we can't investigate and prosecute our way out of this, that it takes more than just law enforcement to address this problem.
Well, maybe you could pinpoint that more specifically, because you say you're using the bully pulpit, but it doesn't seem to rise to the level of some of the other issues that you address that seem more public. How can you work beyond just prosecuting drug dealers?
I'm very supportive of the alternative courtroom mechanisms like drug court or early intervention, where you identify the individuals who have committed criminal behavior, but really it's driven by addiction, whether it be to drug or alcohol, and try to intervene in them and put them on a different path than those who present the real risks to the public health and safety, and get their addiction issues dealt with, whether they end up with a criminal conviction or not. It's that sort of early intervention rather than waiting for a criminal case to move all the way through the system and all the fights and such. And so much more efficient, because really the addiction is what needs to be dealt with rather than punish first and then treatment second.
Is this issue as important to you and your office as tobacco?
Oh, I think it is. It certainly more intensely impacts the lives of those who are caught up in addiction or those who are victimized by criminal behavior. I will say, of course, that of the avoidable public health problems we face, tobacco addiction, premature death, sickness remains our greatest avoidable public health problem.
Shane McCormick, what about for you? If you were Attorney General, how would you deal with the opiate crisis?
Well, I think that if you say that tobacco is the greatest health crisis facing the state of Vermont, I think you're not paying attention. And I think that, I have a 15-year-old daughter and she came home and told me that she's addicted to cigarettes. I would be upset. I'd be angry. If she came home and told me she was addicted to heroin, I'd be apoplectic. There needs to be a different tone from the top. And the top needs it needs to address what is really affecting our society, what is eating our society, frankly. And it's not about counting toe tags in the morgue as to what kills more, what has more victims, tobacco or heroin. It's about what is affecting our society, what is really the cancer in Vermont. Because this is a special place. I grew up here. I want my kids to grow up here. But it's not necessarily just a geographic place between New Hampshire and New York. It's a place where people have a certain perspective on life and people leave their doors unlocked. They leave the keys in the car. And when you have this, what is truly an epidemic, and it's an epidemic because it spreads just like a disease. It spreads to people that wouldn't know heroin if they tripped over it because their homes get broken into, their cars get stolen. It needs to be addressed.
Well, given that you have said publicly that this is one of your top priorities in your campaign and that you don't think the current attorney general is doing enough to address the opiate crisis, so what are some specifics about what you would do as attorney general?
Well, first of all, it's the tone from the top. And I don't think you should be throwing bombs at Bill Sorrell if he's not in the street corner stopping every heroin deal. That's not his job. But he's the attorney general's office. Is more general than attorney, I think, as Senator Jeffords said. This is an office where you need to establish priorities. You need to determine. You work with a limited resources, in a world of limited resources, and you have limited law enforcement resources, and you need to motivate people. You need to lead people. You need to set goals, implement, and execute. And I think part of that involves in this area reaching out on a constant, consistent basis to community leaders, to social workers, to law enforcement. Say, what can we do better about this, and working with them. And I also think it's just about motivating people. I mean, if you really view this as a problem somewhere between sugary beverages and Virginia Slims, you're not going to get people fired up because this requires us getting fired up because our communities are being destroyed by it.
So for you, this is more about the bully pulpit than specific prosecutorial action, for
example. I think that's right. I think it's about the bully pulpit. I think it's about being a source of communication, a conduit between the state's attorney's offices and the different state's attorney's offices being the person that is able to approach the legislature. If you were to take a whiteboard and say, I'm going to create a heroin czar. And what powers would I give him? I'd give him prosecutorial powers. I'd give him, a big budget. I'd give him lots of lawyers. I'd give him access to state's attorneys. I'd give him access to social workers. You're describing the office of the attorney general. Somebody needs to take hold of this and use this office in a way that really addresses what is our number one threat.
You're listening today to the Vermont Edition debate for Attorney General between Republican challenger Shane McCormick and Democratic incumbent Bill Sorrell. Again, later in the hour, we will hear directly from voters. So email your question now to vermontedition@vpr.net. One of the largest cases the AG's office is responsible for handling right now is the state's GMO labeling law, passed by the legislature this year and already being challenged by the Grocery Manufacturers Association and other industry trade groups. Shane McCormick, do you believe that law is defendable, winnable for you, and what would your strategy be if you were elected attorney general?
Well, I think, I think I'll echo what I understand Bill said about it. It won't be a walk in the park. I mean, this is, and I think, to his credit, I think he noted to the legislature that this will be not an easy case necessarily to defend. It is defensible. And I don't think I would, as the attorney general, you have an obligation to defend the laws of the state of Vermont, so long as they're not patently unconstitutional. I would defend this vigorously. What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't, frankly, use out-of-state counsel to do it. I think that there are plenty of qualified Vermont law firms that could defend this law.
You would use outside counsel, just not outside of the state?
Frankly, I think this is blocking and tackling for an attorney general's office. I think if you can't handle within what is one of the largest law firms in the state of Vermont, a First Amendment case, Fifth Amendment case, 14th Amendment, dormant commerce clause, preemption law. I mean, this is stuff. In my opinion, this is stuff that the law firm for the state of Vermont should be able to handle without shipping it outside. Now, the legislature provided $1.5 million and said, go spend it, which, frankly, I'd be jumping up and down if I was the chief law enforcement officer of the state of Vermont saying, if you handed me $1.5 million, you have $1.5 million burning a hole in your pocket. There are about 10 other things from a law enforcement perspective that are more important than paying, millionaire lawyers in Washington, D.C. with, for example, opiate treatment. I mean, if we save one life with that $1.5 million, that's a bargain. because I don't know much about GMOs, but I know a heck of a lot more people have died from heroin than have died from genetically modified grape nuts. And I think as the Attorney General, you need to be able to vocalize that and be able to articulate those concerns.
My understanding, by the way, is that grape nuts are GMO-free.
Oh, okay. Nobody has died from GMO.
I think I could be wrong about that, but that's my understanding.
I don't mean to besmirch the grape nut brand. I apologize.
When you say it's the role of the Attorney General to defend a law unless it is patently unconstitutional, that's a good question, because what is the role of the Attorney General, in your opinion, to talk to the legislature before it passes laws about laws that you think are unconstitutional, which is the main argument of the other side?
I think, well, it puts you in a difficult position. Like all lawyers are always in a difficult position when they're advising their clients as to the, you know, either the forcibility or their positions, you know, prior to executing on it. But I think, you know, frankly, given the role as public servants, I think you need to have a forthright and honest conversation with the legislature as to potential problems down the road, just so they're aware that this is not, you know, this could end up hitting the state's treasury. And that's – look, I mean, what the legislature does is it weighs pros and cons of every issue. And, you know, here's debate, here's discussion. And certainly in today's tight budgets, you know, one of the considerations is the ultimate cost of these policies.
Bill Sorrell, first question for you. Again, going back to what's the strategy here for dealing with the GMO lawsuit? You said right from the beginning you knew we'd be facing a lawsuit. So what is the strategy for defending Vermont's law on GMO labeling?
Well, first of all, to put together a superb team of lawyers to defend the law. And make no mistake, the Vermont Attorney General's office is lead counsel in that case. And I have several very competent assistant AGs who are working essentially full time on the case. We filed a 50-plus page motion to dismiss in federal court a month or two ago, and that's going to play out. But we did go out and retain counsel to assist us. And this ultimately is a case that's not likely to be ultimately resolved at the U.S. the trial court level in Burlington, Vermont, or within the state of Vermont. It's likely to go on appeal at least to the appeals court in New York City, and then quite possibly on to the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, the senior partner in the firm that we've retained to assist us has argued before the U.S. Supreme Court something like 38 times. He was the Chief Justice's mentor during law school. So I make no apologies for putting together the best team possible to try to successfully defend the law.
Is that something that you were burned on in the Vermont Yankee case that you'd like to improve upon?
No, I think the Vermont Yankee case, and we did retain outside counsel for the appellate argument in New York, and we had the advice of outside counsel during the trial level. No, we gave the best fight we could on that, as we did on other cases before the U.S. Supreme Court on access to doctors' prescribing records and campaign finance issues.
If I could split this now to just ask you again the issue of what's your role in talking to the legislature? What should the Attorney General be saying before a case? You have sometimes said that you worry that what you say could be used against you or against the state if a lawsuit is brought. But if you're advising the legislature and they take your advice, then it doesn't come up in the lawsuit.
I think my role, first of all, if I think something is outright unconstitutional, is to be very clear about that. And then I think ethically we could not defend if the legislature just went on and enacted a law that we had opined was unconstitutional. We couldn't ethically defend that statute. But I think we should be very clear when we believe from looking at relevant case law, what trends are, that there is risk and that there might well be a challenge, and this or that would be the likely lines of attack, and it'll be a fight. And if we lose, given that this would be a constitutional dimension case, we would have to pay attorney's fees, and those could be in the millions of dollars. So I tell the legislature the risk. They weigh the risk against the public policy they want to implement through legislation, and they make the decision. And now we will do our best to defend that law.
We're talking to the candidates for Attorney General here on VPR's debate series on Vermont Edition. Moving on to a different topic, this past legislative session, lawmakers passed a bill that will require law enforcement officers in Vermont to record race data with every traffic stop as part of the effort to incorporate bias-free policing into practice. It's something that was already law but has not seemed to be very well enforced or followed. The Attorney General works with police, prosecutes high-level criminals, and defends against lawsuits, such as the one recently brought by a Rutland man who was stopped and had his car impounded and was then left to walk 8 miles home. The ACLU, which is suing the state of Vermont on his behalf, claims that the search and seizure were unlawful. But there have also been questions raised because the man in question is black. That's one of the more recent cases that have raised questions about how police in Vermont may be using racial profiling in individual cases. How important is it to you to ensure that Vermont is aware of any biases in its policing? And what is the Attorney General's role in ensuring bias-free policing? Bill Sorrell.
The justice system, I have an awful lot of responsibility for the effective operation of a justice system, and that includes no bias-free policing, no prejudice against a group. And I, at the request of the Vermont Advisory Committee to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, put together a model bias-free policing policy and put that out for adoption by police departments around the state. A number already had them. Some changed theirs to be in accordance with ours. Others did not. I don't have the authority to mandate that, and so I was pleased that the legislature has required it now that if they don't have their own, then they adopt the model policy from us. But we're only as good as what we do on the streets. And justice needs to be blind and no discrimination on the basis of race, immigration status and the like. And as long as I'm AG, that will continue to be a very big priority.
Well, so then what will you do if the reports come out after we see these departments having to report on traffic stops? And if there does suggest that there's a problem, that we are not doing bias-free policing, then what's your role?
My role is to shine a light on that in the same way that I looked at the use of tasers by law enforcement, both on my own initiative and at the request of the then Brattleboro police chief and then Governor Douglas. And I look particularly at use of tasers around the state, but particularly in Brattleboro. And I was very publicly critical of the Brattleboro police in two instances in which they had used tasers. So you have to be in a position when you see something that's wrong that should be improved to be very clear about it. And I have been, and I will do the same, whether it's in stopping or traffic stops of immigrant employees, workers in the state, or evidence of racial bias.
Shane McCormick, how important is it to you to ensure Vermont is aware of any biases in its policing, and what's the Attorney General's role in ensuring bias-free policing?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's important. It's obviously important. I mean, the role is the chief legal officer of the state of Vermont, and you know, our legal system requires and strives for equality before the law. So to the extent there's a way to determine whether or not we're reaching our goals, you know, not only goals, I guess it's not really goals, it's fulfilling our duties as law enforcement. I think it's absolutely necessary to have this kind of data, and I think you need to – part of the role of the Attorney General's office is to act like the bully pulpit in this kind of situation, to say this is important. This is important to the people of the state of Vermont. I mean, this is an office that really is the law firm for the state of Vermont. It has one client and has 620,000 clients, and those clients may be of different races. They may come from different backgrounds, and you need to ensure that – you need to ensure that they are treated equally, respectfully, and appropriately under the law. So I think there's an important role here.
This would obviously be a new position for you, Attorney General. How would you define your relationship with law enforcement?
I think, you know, good. I haven't been busted yet for the hands-free telephone thing. I will tell you, I mean, this is – I am not a criminal defense lawyer. I am a transactional lawyer. I work on complicated transactional matters. And in my relationship with law enforcement has frankly been perfectly fine. And what I think that I probably can bring to this discussion is more of a perspective of somebody who hasn't been talking to law enforcement for the past 17 years. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I think that that adds a level of independence. I mean, I think if you've been doing, if you've been in charge of the shop for 17 years, I think you own the shop. I think you in many respects, those are your policies that are in effect. And if you've been in charge of law enforcement for the past 17 years, you see your policies out there on the street every day. And I think it's hard to say, I want to correct that, because that's an admission that, that, you know, you haven't been doing it right.
Have you reached out to any law enforcement officers,
yes, I mean,
to any departments?
Yeah, as I've been, you know, sort of campaigning around, I've been speaking with law enforcement folks, talking to different sheriffs, talking to mayors, talking to community leaders, and listening to, you know, generally their concerns. And the question, you know, is what, you know, what is the office doing well for you? Because I don't think, you know, that, you know, although I think I do a better job than Bill Sorrell, I'm sure there are people that think that he does good things for them, including law enforcement. And I want to hear that, and I want to continue that. And, you know, what can the office do better?
You're listening to the VPR Attorney General debate here on Vermont Edition. In just a moment, the candidates will question each other directly, and then they're going to be answering listener questions. So please submit your questions now by writing to vermontedition@vpr.net. Welcome back to VPR's debate series on Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and today we're hearing from the candidates for Vermont Attorney General, Democratic incumbent Bill Sorrell and Republican challenger Shane McCormick. In this part of the debate, the candidates question each other directly. Just a reminder, the questions should be short. This is not a time for policy speeches. This really is a time to get at your opponent's positions and ask a question. The answers can be 60 seconds, and then there will be time for a follow-up question and answer. The first question is going to go, Shane McCormick, you can ask a question of Bill Sorrell.
Yeah, sure. As I guess this question comes as a citizen and a taxpayer. On December 10th, 2013, you got a $2,000 campaign contribution from Russell Budd. The same day, a $2,000 campaign contribution from Dorothy Budd. Then a $2,000 campaign contribution from the law firm of Barron and Budd. And another $2,000 from a man named Scott Summey. $8,000 all from Dallas, Texas. 6 months later, approximately, the Attorney General's office engaged on behalf of the state of Vermont, of all the law firms across this big country, the law firm of Barron and Budd from Dallas, Texas. That strikes me as unusual. And as a taxpayer and as a lawyer, I have concerns about that. And I'd like to understand why.
I'm happy to speak to that issue, and it wasn't – we have hired Barron and Budd and two other national law firms to sue the gas industry for additives called MTBEs that they put in gasoline for a number of years and have allegedly been responsible for pollution of groundwater systems, not only in Vermont but elsewhere. And Barron and Budd is a law firm that has been extensively involved in this litigation around the country, as have the other two firms that we retained. I did get campaign contributions from the Barron and Budd folks. I didn't request them, but at a Democratic AG's Association event, I got a number of checks. I didn't get one dime from either of the other two law firms that the state has retained, and we retained them for their expertise. And I left it to my staff and the Agency of Natural Resources to decide whether we retained Barron and Budd or not, and they made that decision.
Follow-up, Shane McCormick? Yeah.
And I'm not sure, frankly, with all due respect, that I'm satisfied with. I left it to my staff. I think if they know if their boss receives $8,000 to his reelection campaign when he may be facing a tight primary against T.J. Donovan, and he's looking for campaign contributions, that for to expect your staff to be independent and to assess whether or not this law firm, whether or not – I mean, it has the appearance of pay-to-play, frankly.
Well, it wasn't pay-to-play, and I didn't even mention to my staff that I'd received a campaign contribution from any law firm potentially interested in representing the state. And I said, I'm going to leave this to you and the Agency of Natural Resources as to what outside firm or firms the state should retain to represent us should we decide to go forward in this case. And they have the proven expertise, and the proof will be in the pudding on how the case is litigated. not only by Barron & Bud, but the other two firms that have not given me one dime in terms of a campaign contribution.
Bill Sorrell, a question for you.
Yes. Thank you. Shane, you've been quoted as saying 17 years doing the same job is not conducive to doing the job well. I'm not sure how long you've been practicing law, but are you suggesting that when you hit the 17-year mark, you'll be advising your clients to hire someone else to represent them because you won't be doing your job well?
No, I don't think so. But I think there are advantages to term limits. And I think when you're in a position of in a governmental leadership position, I think that there are certain advantages to changing over the leadership in the shop. I think that when you have 17 years in the same position, as I said before, you there's a lot of stuff builds up that you're ultimately responsible for. And I think without a fresh perspective, someone who's willing to take a look at it and to throw out what doesn't work and to keep what works, I think you have more willingness to do that if you're new and fresh to the job.
I don't believe there's a different standard for government work versus private sector work. I've done both. And would you agree with me that it's your competence and your energy and your commitment to your job, whether you're paid by the government or by private corporations, that's the most important in terms of assessing the quality of job performance?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not saying it's not your competence and it's not the quality of performance that matters. I think that it just raises issues. I mean, for example, a focus on tobacco. I think this was a focus early on in your career, and it seems to be a focus currently that this is the number one health threat. And this is, in my mind, the sort of classic generals fighting the last war. This is the Maginot Line of World War II, and we're tanks are rolling in, but we're focused on digging trenches against menthol.
You as a lawyer should be more careful. I didn't say it's the number one health. Public health problem we face. I say it's the number one avoidable public health problem we face.
And that is a big heroin. No, I think we can avoid it. I think to say you can't avoid it is to admit defeat. And I think this is an avoidable problem with the right leadership. We can avoid that. If we can't, then we're in trouble. I mean, if that's the position that you're taking, that this is an unavoidable, that we might as well live with this class of walking dead among us, these people that are, this is a 1 in 4 chance to become addicted when you use a substance. This is Russian roulette that we are letting our kids play. And you're worried about menthol cigarettes.
In education, I have said repeatedly, along with the governor and the head of the state police, prevention is more important than treatment, but treatment's very important. And the least important of those three in the battle against opiate addiction is trying to investigate, prosecute, and incarcerate our way out of this problem.
I agree. We've got to supplement our way out of this problem. I mean, we've got to supplement our way out of this problem because that's the bottom line. There needs to be a solution here. And the sort of this is not my department is it's understandable. You're not, but this is, my daughter in high school, my son in high school next year, and we have opiates in high school. So we need to come up with a solution.
This is an interesting policy debate. I'm going to give you 10 more seconds to respond here because Shane McCormick.
1,200 Vermonters a year are dying prematurely because of tobacco addiction. That's a huge public health problem along with the opiates problem. Should I go on to my second question?
Yes, your second question for Shane McCormick.
Thank you. Sean, as AG, I've emphasized consumer protection in areas like avoiding the scamming of seniors, addressing violations of our laws by propane dealers, unauthorized charges on our phone bills, loans averaging 300% interest by unlicensed lenders to low and middle-income Vermonters. You criticize me for too much focus on consumer protection. As AG, what of our current consumer protection efforts would you no longer pursue?
I would stop the 5-hour energy drink lawsuit. I'm not entirely sure why when we have what is in essence an opiate epidemic, we would assign any lawyer time to fighting over whether or not it has the B vitamins in it or grows hair on your chest and makes you 6 inches taller, like the bottle says. And that is not an appropriate use of lawyer time. I think we're fiddling while Rome is burning, frankly, when we have these kind of pursuits. And I realize that they bring in money and we can put out a press release and hold a press conference about it. But what's really important, this is the law firm for the people of the state of Vermont. And I don't think there are too many people that stay up at night worrying about 5-hour energy drink. I think they stay up at night worrying about their kids. They stay up at night worrying about their neighborhoods. They stay up at night worrying about the hollowing out of our society because of this cancer.
So do you think this industry or this company that has $1 billion a year in annual sales and not only Vermont but a handful of other states contend that they're making false claims on their labeling, unsubstantiated health claims, that we just look the other way and say, well, it's okay. There are other more important matters to address to protect consumers, Vermonters and others?
Yes, I do. I think, you know, if the question is, do we look the other way? Right now, look, we live, again, in a world of finite resources. And I think there are problems that are orders of magnitude higher as to whether or not the $2 bottle of energy drink contains the B vitamins that it says it does. I think, again, it's staggering that we spend taxpayer dollars on this when there are real problems that need to be addressed. And that's what I hear when I talk to law enforcement. It's not the focus. It's not the leadership. It's not, you know, we need to take this hill and we got to figure out how to do it. It's this kind of stuff that I find, again, I have four kids. I grew up here. I want my kids to live here. I want my kids to feel safe here. And I get the feeling that I'm not getting what I need from the chief law enforcement officer of the state of Vermont.
This is the Attorney General debate here on VPR. We're listening to Bill Sorrell and Shane McCormick ask one another questions. And Shane McCormick, you have a chance to ask a second question now to Bill Sorrell.
So 2 years ago when you were running against TJ and against Jack McMullen, you said you need another 2 years to finish the work that you started then 15 years ago. During the past 2 years, what have you done that you think TJ Donovan wouldn't have been able to do as well because he's not as...
I have no idea what T.J. Donovan would have done as Attorney General. The reality is the voters wanted me to serve as Attorney General, both in the Democratic primary and then in the November election against Jack McMullen. And what has happened during those 2 years? Well, among other things, we settled a lawsuit against R.J. Reynolds for $14 million for unsubstantiated health claims on their so-called reduced risk products. We're now defending the GMO labeling law. We have continued our efforts to address the downloading and online sharing of child pornography in Vermont and been arresting out of my office on average one person a month during these past 2 years. Vermont Yankee has moved from a fight about whether they're going to decommission to now they're shutting down here in a couple of weeks, and we turn our attention to an expeditious, environmentally conscious decommissioning of Vermont Yankee. A lot's been accomplished in 2 years by me as Attorney General, and there remains a number of things to be done going forward.
Do you have a follow-up? Make sure it's a question.
I guess the follow-up is, and you're confident you're the best man for the job, too.
Absolutely. So. No question.
All right. That's a pretty definitive answer. We're listening today to the challengers for Attorney General debate one another. They've had a chance to ask each other some questions. We're talking to Shane McCormick, the Republican challenger, and Bill Sorrell, the Democratic incumbent Attorney General. And coming up in just a moment here on VPR, we will have questions submitted by our listeners, by the voters, for the candidates. You are listening to VPR's debate series on Vermont Edition. Welcome back. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is the VPR debate series on Vermont Edition. Today, we are learning more about the major party candidates for Attorney General, Democrat Bill Sorrell, and Republican Shane McCormick. And we turn now to questions our listeners want to pose to the candidates. We got a question from Alan in Burlington, who says, I am very concerned that Vermont police are killing citizens with impunity. In Brattleboro, police killed a boy holding a knife to his own throat on the floor of a church. Police killed a suspected burglar running through the woods in Lamoille County armed with nothing more than a cell phone. In each of these cases, and more in recent years, the Attorney General's office has cleared the officers of all charges. The Attorney General relies on relationships with the state's other law enforcement officers to do his job. It appears to be a conflict of interest for the Attorney General to be the investigator of police killings. Would you support having all killings by police either be presented to a grand jury or having a more impartial and independent entity investigate and determine whether charges should be brought in police killing cases? Shane McCormick, the question goes to you first.
No, I think it's exactly where it needs to be right now in the Attorney General's office. I think the Attorney General has an obligation to be as forthright as possible regarding these investigations, to present the information if the officer is cleared. The concern that there's some sort of collusion here, I think, I don't think that's the case. That being said, I think everyone that's a citizen should have some concern about police tactics. Obviously, the militarization of our police, I think, is something that folks have raised with me when I've been talking with them out campaigning, and I think that's a legitimate concern to have and something that should be discussed. But as far as the office, I wouldn't move it.
Bill Sorrell.
I have convened grand juries looking at police use of force, and people in local communities have made the decisions not to indict. Unfortunately, under our current law, I am not at liberty to even disclose the impaneling of a grand jury if no indictment is handed down. I asked the legislature to change that law so I could disclose that fact. The House went along. The Senate did not. I hope they'll take it up again in January. The reality is the review is not whether it should have been done differently. Was this a criminal assault? Was this an intentional aggravated assault or murder by a law enforcement officer? Or was the officer reasonably in fear at that moment of death or serious bodily injury for the officer or by an innocent bystander? And under that standard, we have cleared the vast majority of the cases. That being said, I would like to see more public scrutiny of the process.
Question two comes from Mark, who says, what is Attorney General Sorrell's and Mr. McCormick's positions regarding the unchecked use of license plate readers by law enforcement, including the length of time the data is stored? Bill Sorrell.
I think Vermont's got it about right with a statute that doesn't allow it to be the information to be kept forever. I think it's 30 months. I'm forgetting. I think that we're going to see more discussions about not only license plate readers, but about the use of drones by law enforcement and private industry going forward. I think the reality is with advances of technology, law enforcement and Homeland Security take advantage of that. But with advances in technology, the criminal element use that too. And so it's a bit of a fight. But I think we're going to have many more discussions about privacy going forward in this country. And I think for right now anyway, Vermont has it about right on license plate readers.
I think it's an issue for the legislature. I think that they can determine whether or not 30 months is appropriate or 15 months or whether or not these things should be banned. I would obviously as Attorney General defend what their decision was. I think that it's perfectly constitutional to have these devices. As a citizen, I share a some concern about this being sort of the thin end of the Big Brother wedge, but I think that ultimately it's a policy decision, and the legislature makes these decisions.
Our third question comes from John, who posts, if the Attorney General cannot remove the drug trade from our environment, why prosecute the addicts? If you cannot remove the drugs, make them legally accessible when all therapy trials fail. This will protect us and protect our addicted population. So I guess John's question is, what about prosecuting drug addicts and why not legalize all drugs? Would you be supportive of that? Shane McCormick.
Legalizing all drugs? No. I mean, I wouldn't be supportive of legalizing heroin, for example, or in some of these opiates. As I said, this is like Russian roulette. You can lead to a rapid death or a life that's as close to death as one can imagine, living to fix. So I think these things are inherently dangerous and can never be used in a way that would otherwise destroy one's life. I don't think anyone's ever told their high school counselor, "I want to be a heroin addict when I grow up," or any heroin addict wants to be a heroin addict. They want to get away from these substances. As far as the prosecution, I agree. I think it costs $60,000 a year or so to house somebody in prison in the state of Vermont. I think that's an enormous sum of money to when you can save. You can spend a fraction of that on treatment. And I think these are the sorts of things that T.J. Donovan's been doing in Chittenden County, where they're pre-charged and they're evidence-based and they're placed into treatment as a way that it's a win for the folks and a win for the taxpayer.
Bill Sorrell, how would you respond to John?
I would not favor legalization of heroin or the heavily addictive opiates that we see. We do need to do much more on the education prevention side, given the purity of heroin and the ability to ingest it initially by snorting or smoking as opposed to injection. It's a much more dangerous drug than it was in the past, and the new opiates are hugely addictive. Some people, if you look at Bess O'Brien's film, get addicted their first brush with these things. But I think I said earlier in the broadcast that treating the addiction as opposed to the punitive response in the vast majority of cases makes the most sense. It's the best use of public dollars and has the greatest or greater or greatest promise that there won't be repeat criminal behavior going forward.
This is Vermont Edition's debate for the attorney general candidates, and we have some time for some lightning round questions here to get another couple of topics in. We've just been talking about drugs, John's question about legalizing drugs. If you could each take 30 seconds to respond to what about the question of marijuana? Should we legalize marijuana? Bill Sorrell.
I think the legislature is going to take a hard look at this, and given what the legalization now in Washington and Colorado, the fact that the federal government has backed up or withdrawn from prosecution. I think we will see legalization. I'm supportive of legalization of marijuana in Vermont. And if the legislature doesn't do it this next session, I think it will within the next few years. And I think a number of other states will follow suit.
Shane McCormick.
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree. I mean, I think that, you know, it's obviously it's a question for the legislature, but I would not oppose. And frankly, I'd support on personal freedom grounds as a citizen. I think that I think Vermonters can understand this is a substance that is vastly different from heroin.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, this is more akin to a menthol cigarette, for example.
Sugar sweetened beverage tax, is this a good law for Vermont to enact? Shane McCormick.
No, I don't think so. I think people should be able to drink high test Coke or have Diet Coke, and I don't think that the state has any role in taxing you or punishing you because it has decided that it knows better for you and your liver. I think it's offensive. I think, you know, this is not a this is. Although I understand, obviously, taxes on cigarettes and taxes on these more significantly dangerous products, this is – who knows? Who knows where the science will be on sugar 10 years from now?
Would you defend that law if it was passed?
I would defend the law if it was passed. Yes, I would, because I think there are certainly constitutional precedents for these kind of taxes.
Bill Sorrell.
Obesity is catching up with tobacco as the greatest avoidable public health problem in the state and in the country right now. The average American adult drinks 50 gallons a year of sugar-sweetened beverages. It plays a very real role in the increase in diabetes rates and obesity. And just like cigarettes, I think that an SSB tax should be imposed and the money raised from it for healthcare and prevention purposes.
State Supreme Court justices have said that the Vermont judiciary is not adequately funded. What level of concern does this rise to for you, Bill Sorrell?
I don't think it's just the judiciary. I think that state's attorneys, I was Chittenden County state's attorney twice, the busiest courtroom in the state, public defenders are overwhelmed. So I don't think it is just the judiciary. The question is, I think we just need to continue on being more efficient and trying to get more cases out of the traditional adversarial system that uses an awful lot of judge time. Just so we should be more efficient, but everybody could use more resources, not just the judiciary.
Shane McCormick.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think the state's attorney's offices are woefully underfunded. I think, you know, you read the salaries of these young lawyers are coming out with law school loans and trying to start a family here in Vermont and to actually engage in this kind of public service. I think part of the role of the attorney general is to be an advocate on behalf of the state's attorney's offices, to use that bully pulpit to say this is where the rubber meets the road. These are the people that on a day-to-day basis are prosecuting the B&Es, prosecuting the drug crime, and you know, if this is an effective use of our funds. I agree completely, by the way, on the diversion and the pre-charge policies.
Well, we have now a chance for each of you to deliver a final statement, answer a final question about why you deserve to win this race. We'll start with Bill Sorrell. You've been attorney general for 17 years. Why should Vermonters reelect you?
They can take a look at my record and see not just some promises, but my accomplishments, both in the, you know, the civil rights, the consumer protection, the criminal justice arena, the environmental protection arena. And they can take a look at the caliber of the people I've been able to attract to the office, take a look at the fact that we've been bringing in, on average, more than $40 million a year from successful enforcement of our consumer protection laws. And they know what they're getting more energy, competence, and commitment for the very important matters that are on the plate for us going forward for 2 years. They know what they're going to get for AG. And just like the fellow who stopped me at a red light on the way driving over here today, he gave me the thumbs up, said, I'm voting for you. Thank you for what you do. We want you back. And I'm available to serve if the voters want.
And Shane McCormick, you're completely new to governing. Why should Vermonters trust you with this position?
Well, because I'm prepared to provide a totally different tone. I'm prepared to bring this office, provide this office a totally different focus. I think this is something that, frankly, I need to do. You know, as a Vermonter, as a father, as a lawyer here who lives here and loves the state. I mean, I know we're not getting the leadership we need currently from the Attorney General's office, and the only person sitting at this table is going to do it is me, and I need solutions. I am prepared to work hard to find those solutions, and I'm prepared to implement a whole different perspective as to the priorities of this office. I think we need to look at what really matters to most Vermonters, what is really tearing our communities apart, and not moral pursuits against cigarettes and flavoring and soda pop. This people are dying, frankly. People are dying, and we're talking about mentholyptus, and that's disappointing, and that needs to change.
You've been listening to the VPR debate for Attorney General with Republican challenger Shane McCormick. And before that, we heard incumbent Democrat Bill Sorrell. Thank you both very much for being on the debate today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, Jane.
There is a third candidate for Attorney General. Rosemary Jakowski of the Liberty Union Party couldn't be here today. She did provide her campaign platform to us, and you can find a link to that from VPR.net. Just click on today's debate. VPR's debate series continues Friday when we hear from the major party candidates for Secretary of State. That office oversees election law, voter rights, and access to government records. Submit your question for Friday's debate to Vermont Edition at VPR.net. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sage Van Wing. Peter Biello directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was written and performed by Eric Iwazen and the New Trombone Collective. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening. Thank you.